Many of the songs that made Somali-born rapper and musician Kanaan a success relate gritty stories from his childhood in war-torn Mogadishu. But his most recent release comes with a more polished pop sound and lyrics that address his audience, primarily American teenage girls unfamiliar with Somalia. In a New York Times op-ed published this past Sunday, Kanaan wrote about the compromises that he made along the way. He described them as self-censorship. If you're an artist or a musician, have you censored yourself in order to be heard or to be read? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Kanaan joins us now from our bureau in New York, and thanks very much for being with us today.
Hey, it's good to be here.
And you wrote in your opinion piece, this is the first time you felt pressure to self-censor your music. How did it happen?
Well, it happened in a very nuanced way, like a lot of life, you know, we like a relationship, you know, when things start to change and become what it wasn't, you know, it's hard to take note of that exact moment. But I do know that I've had many conversations with, you know, well-intentioned, record people who are business people, essentially, who want to find a way to break the music, as they say, and it's increasingly difficult to break music like mine in top 40, really mainstream commercial radio in America, because my subjects often are so foreign and so jarring and difficult, you know, for the listener to have to stop and think about another place and another life and all of that drama. And so that was, I think, the beginning of the consideration for me to self-censor.
Break the terminology in the record business in the way you're using it means get it to be very popular, get it to be very
that's
big.
Right. That's right.
There's another meaning for break, too, and I fear that that's what you figure out happened to your music.
Well, I think what happened in my music is that it kind of got stuck in this place where the audience that it was meant for, I mean, and that's in the way that, you know, the business has courted my music towards a certain audience and the audience that it wanted, has a problem connecting to my music, because I think that, like I explained in the piece, that there is a spiritual dimension which comes with work, mm-hmm. which comes with art and poetry and sound. And I think that they, in some way, I can't prove this, but I think that they figured that out, that the dimensions tell them that there's something else being hidden, that here there's a personality being cleaned of its soul and of its story.
Authenticity.
And that's right. And you know, the songs aren't bad, to be honest. I mean, they stand up there as they have been on the radios, you know, among the really well-written pop music that's out there, but that doesn't mean anything, you know, because you're still hiding some kind of a baggage that the audience feels in their spirit discomforted by.
I want to give people a bit of an idea of what we're talking about. These are two tunes that you reference in your piece in the New York Times. This is a track from your 2009 album, Troubadour, which featured a song called Fatima, which is the story of lost love and the dangers of growing up in Somalia.
If beauty was in the eyes of beholder, how come everyone hushed when she walked by? How come girls would look just to scold her? How come the angel wanted to hold her? Fatima, Fatima, I'm in America. I make rhymes and I make them delicate. You would've liked the parks in Connecticut. You would've said I'm working too hard again. Damn you, shooter, damn you, the building. Whose walls hid the blood she was spilling? Damn you, country, so good at killing. Damn you, feeling for person. Is it true when they say all you need is just love? Is it true? What about those who have loved? Only to find that it's taken away. And why do they say that the children have rights to be free?
And after Fatima, this is a clip from your latest album entitled Country, God, or the Girl. The single Is Anybody Out There with Nelly Furtado.
His name was Adam when his mom had him. Dad was a phantom, never took a look at him. Antisocial, hated outdoors, always in playing Madden. Adam was lonely, drugs were the only way out of his
own life. Now he's slowly losing his fire, close to retire. With one last hope, he puts his arms up higher. I can see him crying out, yeah. Is there anybody out there? He's really counting all your love, still struggling uphill, but you act like you don't care. Right now, he can really use a shoulder, hanging on to the edge till it's over. He's crying for your love tonight, lonely is hard to survive, he said.
And there's certainly a message in that song.
Yes.
But I wonder, when you grew up, did you know anybody named Adam?
No. And so I think the two major differences in those songs, you know, are Fatima being a very personal story is about something that I knew, that I grew up with. And so I'm writing from a place of a center of authenticity, somewhere that only I know how to write from. You know, everyone has their own particular story and their own authentic life experience, and they write from that. And so this one is the one that's particular to me. And because of that, I write with a certain fervor and certain deep sense of understanding all of the layers and colors of that world. And it's about a very tough subject, because the girl is lost love, but lost love in that she died, mm-hmm. and in the war. And so that those two combinations of things make it very hard for a song like that to be on the radio here, especially competing against music that's about going out and having fun and buying things and being in a club. The other song, even then, I couldn't really bring myself to writing that kind of music. And the other song tries to be about something important also. However, that thing that is important isn't the thing that I know best. You know, it's not from my own authentic experience.
And did it work?
To a degree, actually. It worked in that it got on, you know, the radio. It was one of the top, it was one of the most added songs on top 40 radio in America. And then it kind of just faded away in a bit. You know, because it was like, I think at first you can be easily fooled by the song and all its shiny package, and you can hear it in the radio and you say, certainly these teenage, you know, young Americans who listen to Top 40, they love this because this just makes so much sense and it sounds like it's their kind of a song. But time goes by and they're like, there's something else about that. You know, there's something about it that isn't quite, I think, true.
And it's interesting to read about you and read your piece. Obviously, one of your heroes was Bob Marley.
Yeah.
And he, it seems to me, stayed true to that thing that he knew.
Yes, he did. He did. I mean, not without challenges, though.
No.
You know, he's had his own challenges, and he's felt certainly compromised sometimes by his record label, or by the business around him. He'd felt, you know, I can't speak for the man, but from what I've learned, and you know, that at times, and from being close to his family, that at times he felt himself that he wanted to give an authentic experience and an authentic message, and that sometimes was disturbed by the concept of marketing him to an audience.
We're talking with Kanaan, the Somali-born hip-hop artist, about his piece that appeared in the New York Times over the weekend. There's a link to it at our website. Go to npr.org, click on Talk of the Nation. We also want to hear from those artists and writers in the audience who may have had to compromise their message or their package to be heard or to be read. Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. And Jonathan's on the line with us from Charlotte.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, thanks.
First of all, Kanaan, huge fan, man. Love your music.
Thank you.
Yeah, a while back I was actually doing some hip-hop. I do mostly hip-hop beats now, and I'm in a band. But when I was writing lyrics, one of the first things we ran into is, you know, not just so much changing the message. I have a lot of, like, strong viewpoints on religion and politics, but also framing the message to where you're actually achieving the desired result. A lot of it seemed to come out kind of angry. And I was like, I don't necessarily want to make people angry. I want to make people think. I want to make people aware of these things. And I was told at the time, you know, sometimes the way I put things actually pushes people away. It's almost too strong. If they don't immediately agree, they don't want to keep listening, and they kind of lose a very valid point you might be making because you alienate them right away with strong language. So trying to find a way to get what I'm trying to say to people in a way that's actually going to achieve the result.
And reach people. And Kenan, that's something you wrote about, I thought, quite eloquently in your piece. You're trying to reach people. And what's wrong with making a message that reaches a lot of people?
Yeah, no, I think that's the conundrum. It's that you want to reach people, but you also want to reach them in the most authentic way that you can reach them as well. Because there's no sense in reaching the one of the goals, which is that you now have a mass market and an audience that's listening, but they're in love with a song that means absolutely nothing to you. And so that's the catch which you have to, which all of us have to kind of be careful about, is to reach your goal authentically is probably in the end going to mean much more to you than having reached it in a false way.
Jonathan, you working on that?
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, with the newer projects now, I'm in a band, and that helps out a little bit because I'm not, you know, in the lyric side of it. But with having the whole band, it allows us when the lyrics are maybe a little strong, you know, the music can kind of help smooth out the strong lyrics. I think you mentioned Bob Marley. I think he did an amazing job with that. If you listen to the music, it's very feel-good. And if you listen to the lyrics, there's a lot of important messages that aren't always, you know, about good things. And I think that with a band, the music can really help to still say what you want to say, but the music kind of be that lubrication that kind of allows people to deal with listening to it and think about it in not so, you know, a negative way.
Yeah. And I agree, Jonathan. And I think that, you know, my past records have done that fairly well also. Like songs that were about difficult topics were ingested easily because of the melodic elements that surrounded the songs and also the way in which a story is told. You know, I never came from a place of like judgment, or my lyrics have never really been harsh towards anybody. It was just a recounting, a story that's being told, and that way the audience feels, they don't feel oppressed by your message. They feel like they're watching somebody tell their story, and from that they get a sense of inspiration. And I think that's the best way to work. You know, you don't want anyone ever telling you what to do, but still, even in that context, you know, you still suffer from the moments that the ambition starts to creep up inside you, and you begin to see an audience, and you begin to see a larger audience, you begin to start to get into the job of protecting the audience and protecting them from your message so that they stay in your household, so that you're not too jarring and too difficult and too burdensome. So that's why I felt compelled to write the piece.
Jonathan, thanks very much. Good luck with the band.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for taking my call.
We're talking with Kenan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's see if we get another caller in. This is Donovan. Donovan with us from Moore, South Carolina, excuse me.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead,
I would like to say, first, Kenan, I really appreciate your music, and as a musician and school teacher, there's not a class since I've seen your Tiny Desk concert that I haven't had watch and have a discussion about censorship and what it means to have those responsibilities of authorship to the art itself and to whatever potential audience would listen to it. So I really appreciate that Tiny Desk concert. It's been a great conversation starter for students. In 2010, I released an album, and knowing that there would be students that would listen to it, and as a teacher as well, there were aspects of that where I self-censored and had to decide what would be appropriate for the potential audience and what would not be, and change some lyrics to certain verses. And turns out, went back and had a great producer working with me, a lot of experience, and made some of those changes back to the original lyric. Thought it was a little too watered down and had pulled some punches. But what surprised me the most is the backlash on aspects I had not even considered. A song I'd written about a guy who comes home and finds his love in bed with another man, and really the repercussions of that emotional action, and he ends up in prison. It's kind of a first-person storyteller type of song. But very few people I've found, in retrospect, listen to the story aspect, and they misinterpret it as a song about criminal domestic violence, which has been a lot of conversations I've had. It said, you know, I understand. I upset you with the song. Take a second and look at it.
In other words, people were hearing a message that wasn't there.
Yeah, it was not there. And I would like to ask, you know, Kanon, if he's ever experienced that with any of his songs.
I don't mean to cut you off, but we wanted to get an answer. We just have a few seconds left.
Yeah, I think that does often happen. I think that there's two messages that happen in a song, two informations that the person can receive. One in their ear, which is what you're hearing and the words you're processing, and another in their soul, which is the other information of the music, the spirit of the sound, the moment that you recorded it, the magic that you encapsulated that you didn't know was there. That's another information that they're getting. And so sometimes people respond to different things you may not know. I learn a lot from my audience when I put out a song, you know, what they think or the conversations that's taking place about my songs. Sometimes intrigues me because it's not what I meant to talk about.
Donovan, thanks very much. Good luck. And Kanon, thank you so much for being with us today.
It's a pleasure.
Kanon joined us from our studio in New York at our bureau there. Tomorrow, one of the books we missed this year, Tom Ricks's The Generals. Join us for that. It's The Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.